Space, the final frontier. Space Station Ashlyn sits on the edge of Federation space with its companion ship, the USS Delamis Christian. The space around them is full of mystery and strange wonders, where secrets are kept and danger lurks around every corner. The crew of the Delamis Christian must navigate treacherous waters as they work to protect the Federation. But as they peer into the unknown, they will discover that the line between friend and foe is not always clear. They will be tested like never before, and will face challenges that will push them to their limits. Join us on this adventure as we explore the farthest reaches of space and uncover the hidden truths that lie within the shadows. Tabletop Journeys presents Star Trek: Preservations.
Lab one will slide open, and Tovar will walk in. Lieutenant, step into the office, and I explain to you what's going on. So, as you are aware, this geological eruption is going to happen unless we intervene. So, I need to know if we intervene now, and we have the ability and technology to stop it, first and foremost. Secondly, the RDF forces are maneuvering their lights into position to launch nuclear missiles at this site, which will kill everything on this planet. If we can't stop it, and we can't stop them, I need to know if and how we can cause the geological eruption to occur before the satellites get into position and before they're able to launch their missile strike.
Understood.
I know this is not a scenario that anyone trained any of us for, but this is one of those killing millions to save billions. And I'm sorry to have to put you in this position. No Starfleet officer should ever have to contemplate this, but we are here, and this is my decision, but I need the information to make it.
I understand. I'll get the best information I can so we can make, you can make the best decision that you can.
And he smiles sadly and puts a hand on your shoulder and says, thank you very much. I know you'll do your best. And then he turns around and leaves.
All right. Gathering the information with all the technology you have and all the science behind the Federation to this point, it's not the easiest task because of the time frame more than the actual difficulty of gathering the information, but it's also not the worst case scenario. In this situation, it is only a 3 difficulty. However, with millions and or billions of lives on the line, the complication factor is fairly difficult at 3 as well. So there's a lot of room for complicating factors, but it is 3 and 3 as far as difficulty and complication goes.
All right. I definitely would like to buy dice with bold science, and how I'm going to leverage that is I'm under a lot of pressure and I'm moving at as fast of a pace as I can. So I feel like I'm grabbing as many resources as I can possibly grab.
How many dice would you like to buy?
So I want to buy with threat. Can I also buy a momentum?
You can.
Okay, so 1 threat and 1 momentum.
All right.
And I also have to roll the other die because I'm rolling dice.
So it's 1 threat, 2 momentum, which we do have for the second die.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Correct.
This is 1 and then 2 and then 3.
Okay. So I rolled a 1 and a 4, and the 13 is also a success, and I get a 16, which is not a success. And then the other die rolled higher than, so I think that contributes a threat, if I recall correctly.
Correct. So I gain a threat. You have.
And I'm so glad that's the die I rolled high, because I rolled a 20 on it, and I first immediately was like, no!
That's four successes. It was a 3 difficulty, correct?
Yes, but you do have bold science, so you can reroll one of those that didn't succeed.
Oh, yes.
And then if you have a focus that applies, that 4 is a critical.
Yeah.
So I rerolled the 16 and got an 8, so that's a success. The closest I have is biology, which I don't think that, or maybe forensic science. I don't.
No.
Chemistry? I don't think any chemistry of those would apply.
Yeah, chemistry would. Yeah, I'll give you chemistry.
All right, 6 successes, so 3 momentum, Lee.
Let me add those 3 momentum in. You have 3 momentums. If you would like an immediate spend, you can do so, or I can bank as you would like. What would you like to do?
The thing that I really want to do is, using the information that I'm able to get, is to identify the path that will cause the least amount of lives lost. It's the what I'm hoping to do. I don't know if that's like a spend to kind of goes together.
So I would definitely say to get that, there's 2 ways to do it. You could ask a question based on the base information I'm about to provide, and then hopefully that would lead you in the right direction, but that may require a different challenge to then engage it. Or you could spend 2 and create that perfect opportunity where you just know the correct path that provides the least amount of loss of life.
I'd like to do that.
Excellent.
What, like, my whole character concept is protecting the life, and we're all good, and there's good everywhere. And so anyway, go ahead.
There is a really good chance that you could successfully create an incident big enough to scare these people back from the brink, but not create a loss of life at all. It would, however, require someone to introduce a small amount of antimatter into the warp core matrix of this ship, basically causing a micro warp breach on that ship, considering where it is. If that was timed with the geologic event, it would literally create a situation where it collects the energy from that, and while it would create a lot of destruction, it would not allow that to expand as far as it would. Basically, you create a singularity at the point of explosion, sucking in that energy. They would still record that their whole plan went awry because of all their shortcuts. And for them, because they don't have that knowledge of singularities at this point, they would only be able to say, hey, we got really freaking lucky. We need to figure it out.
It sounds like timing needs to be perfect.
The execution of this would be critical, and it would require very good knowledge of how that would work on that ship, and you'd have to have the ability to time it as well.
All right. I will immediately reach out to the commander and start off with, I have a very complicated answer and some good information, but I don't think it's going to be as straightforward and easy as we could hope. And I'll relay the information. And then I'll be like, in my scientific opinion, I think the route of best path would be, and explain the antimatter plan. Very fast and like fast worded.
Yeah, but Tobor keeps up with it because he too has a 4 in science. So he's like, I'm liking this. Mr. Ocean, you overheard what the lieutenant had to say?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Do we have the download from the buoy yet?
You do.
All right. I think the plan is, Mr. Tenori, I got some engineering for you.
Yes, sir.
I need you to take one of the micro torpedoes off of the tank Abbott, and modify it with Lieutenant Nealon's specifications, such that when we fire it at the Mako ship, it'll cause the sufficient explosion and the geothermic eruption as contained and as controlled as possible.
Pauses a bit before answering. He's like, yes, sir.
At this particular point in time, Stavin interrupts you again. I do apologize, sir, for what is clearly becoming a habit. Despite your request at radio silence, it seems the Colonel insists on communicating with you. I should add that he has actually found an intriguing way of doing so. Apparently,
don't they tell me
have
he's hacked their satellite network.
Oh, not hacked per se. Connected with their worldwide communications civilian network. Apparently, they're very big on playing games online. And some of them are very fantastical from their perspective. He's literally created a gaming scenario, and he's communicating to you, sir.
Very good. Put it through holodeck one. Come on, everyone. Let's go put on some chainmail.
This gaming scenario is actually more like a Call of Duty kind of gaming scenario. It's very cool. So you walk in and no. He's like, I don't think we've got time for that, sir, because he's very insistent on what's happening, but I can certainly put it through on your viewers in your ready room.
Go ahead and put it through the viewer in my ready room and put the filter on me for the commanding officer of an NX class uniform on the screen so I don't freak him out.
Of course, sir. He would not have seen Trill, sir.
The filter the risk of yeah.
Excellent.
Good catch, Ensign.
I pride myself on excellence, sir. The communication comes through, and you see this big, thick, mustached colonel. I think like a Sam Elliott kind of mustache. Not graying hair at this stage. He's actually a younger Sam Elliott style, but much broader shouldered, barrel-chested kind of individual in the typical Mako uniform, and he stands before you, and he is at the position of parade rest, and he says, whom am I speaking with?
My name is Commander Sabian Tobor of the United Federation of Planets Starship Delamis Christian. And the reason why you don't recognize my name or my ship's name is because if you check your chronometer, you've been in cryostasis for nearly 200 years, Colonel.
And in 200 years, we haven't changed uniforms, sir?
I turn it off. I just didn't want you to freak out seeing something you didn't recognize.
Appreciated, sir. I didn't get to be a colonel, trained under Colonel Hayes, by accepting the obvious and letting it frighten me. First in, first out, ready to go.
Well, we have a unique situation here, Colonel, and I hope you can appreciate that. In the time since you've been gone, Starfleet has adopted a non-intervention policy, especially after several wars we blundered into. So we are, in fact, trying to initiate a rescue of you and your team without disrupting the locals. We now have a policy that any civilization that does not have warp capability is not to know of the existence of life outside of their sphere until such time as they develop the technology independently.
The whole plan to follow the Vulcan idea went through, huh?
Yep. And it stuck. And served us well so far, with a couple minor exceptions.
Well, sir, I appreciate your candor. I also appreciate you confirming the information we already have. As you said, we were asleep. Our ship was still recording. We have access to the history of the Federation and its changes. So
oh, good.
We're aware of the directives, in so much as we understand some elements of it. Some of it's a bit out there, but I'm pretty confident that the idea is to stay hidden. When you asked me to do so, I got it. So we found a workaround.
Excellent. Very clever of you. I appreciate the ingenuity.
Not me, sir. I have some of the best people on my team.
So what we've got going right now is my team has infiltrated their sensor network and is putting it into a record loop mode so that when we micro warp jump in, retrieve your team and leave, we'll have little to no evidence that we were here, or if they do have any evidence, it's only just that their systems were tampered with, but not the Y's. And we'll leave them to speculate on it for years to come. It'll probably become one of their most favorite conspiracy theory in their culture.
And this volcano that's about to erupt under my feet?
Unless you have a really big bag of ice, there's not much we can do about it.
Are we scuttling the ship, sir?
Yes. I don't see any way to get it extracted. Is it in working order?
Not anytime soon.
Yeah, then we've got about 2 hours before their targeting satellites get into position over you and they fire a holocaust of nuclear warheads at you, turning this geological eruption from a global catastrophe into an extinction level event. So get to recreate World War III and see what the survivors get to do.
I'd like to step to the Tobor's right, so I'm on screen as well. And I would like to ask, Colonel, you've had access to the planet's network connections. Do you have a sense of what their technology level is? Is there anything on your ship which would be inappropriate for them to get their hands on?
Based on what we understand of your prime directive, our warp core, our phase pulse weaponry, any data that if they were ever able to get to a technological level to deal with, all of those would be compromising. But we're a Mako vessel, sir. We have plans for scuttling a ship that will make most of that useless, with the exception of a warp core that's mostly inert.
So there is an expression on my face that is, it breaks from the cold demeanor that I normally have to an appreciative smile. So, very good.
Excellent, sir. I can say this. Once we woke up, the number two person on my team was the Starfleet engineer and the Starfleet pilot. We didn't have the means by which to break free anytime soon, so any help there you can give us, we'll take. But if it keeps Earth and the Federation, our coalition members, the Andorians and the Vulcans and the Tellarites, out of harm's way, we're perfectly willing to prepare our shielded secondary fuel sources into play to scuttle the ship.
I have to have my chief engineer run the numbers. We got a micro singularity antimatter torpedo that we're planning to use to destroy the ship and trigger the geologic event. If all goes according to plan, it'll look like a natural disaster and it'll completely incinerate all evidence of the vessel before the RDF can get their targeting satellites into position and launch an Armageddon strike.
A human kind of peeks around the colonel, and they're in a Starfleet uniform, clearly have the reds, probably operations in some fashion, and says, what I know about how warp theory works with that type of thing would mean you'd have to be very precise. We're talking millimeters of variance versus placing said device by hand on site. Why don't you have your team give us the specs you need us to do, and we'll take care of it here.
That could work.
Colonel says, how fast can you get us out of here?
We have perfected matter transportation technology. Once we warp into position, we can have your team out in seconds.
My doc ain't gonna like this, but every corpsman's gonna have a gripe.
Yes, very good, Colonel. I'll have my chief engineer connect with yours. We will get the torpedo beam down once we're in position. Get your men off the ship, and we'll set it off.
We'll be prepared in our staging area in our cargo bay. We'll have it cleared so we're isolated. And I'll have them grouped by squad.
Very good. With the torpedo, I'm going to beam down 14 identification transporter tag badges that'll increase the signal capacity and making sure we can get a better lock on each and every one of your men. How many are left?
We lost a few in the battle before we went hurtling through space. We are 35 strong. Only two Starfleet personnel have survived.
Very good. I'll have 35 of these badges made and beamed down along with the device.
Roger that, sir. At this point, because you had done all the big spends to make all the planning correctly, the biggest role involved here is going to be the role for the placement, which your roles tell them where to place it. Even their technology will let them do that without any problem. What we are rolling for is any complications. And what I'm going to do is a bit unusual because I want everybody to be involved because this is like the big climactic end of the mission. Ah, I don't want to do that. What were you going to do?
Because Tobor is going down to place it himself.
Oh, okay.
Tobor is going to be the last one off the planet, and he is going, if anything goes wrong, it's him and his command and none of his officers.
I'm going to let you hash that out with your senior staff first, and then so I will hush up as your staff prepares for the process. You know that the flight in is going without incident because you've done that, so the ship will be in position. If you're beaming down with the gear and the equipment and getting ready to do all the placement and they're ready to beam up, the one thing is, because you're going to have to basically do everything, timing is everything. If you start doing like multiple different things at the same time or different times, that won't go well. So it's everybody has to be primed, ready, and then it's going to be multiple beam outs all at once, with the exception of whoever's setting off the charges kind of thing. So I will let you hash out the I'm going to go down there and do it myself with your team.
So I head down to main engineering to check in with Mr. Tenari on how the modifications to the microtorpedo is going.
I will present the case to the captain. Gingerly. Sir, here's the microtorpedo.
Excellent work, Mr. Tenari.
It's shielded and braced as much as it can, but I wouldn't suggest manhandling it too much for whomever goes down.
Very good. Yeah, no juggling. Got it.
And we've got the transporters ready for the mass beam up.
Excellent. And I assume this case here is the 35 transport comm badges for them all?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
I've actually got 40 just in case we lose any or any get smashed.
Fantastic. Good thinking.
All right. Anything else for the CO, Lieutenant Tenari?
I turn to walk out the door.
I have no idea what his plans are.
Yeah, he hasn't said that he's going.
Right.
Okay. The CO walks out with a bomb in his attaché.
It's almost like he's being strategic in what he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I will, as he walks out, I will be watching him very carefully, or at least the attaché very carefully. Someone walking out with a few pounds of antimatter is bound to make one nervous.
Make that right-hand turn, walk down the little way into the turbo lift. Transporter room 1.
If I knew you were going to the transporter room, I'd be going with you because I plan on handling the transporter myself.
He didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything.
I just walked out the door.
CO, you enter the transporter room. Your transporter chief, crewman first class, Bonnie, ready at the controls. Sir?
I come walking in. Morning, Bonnie.
Sir?
Strange, mighty strange weather we've got today. I'm assuming you've been briefed?
Not on why you're here at this moment, sir, no.
Oh, no, you're briefed on the recovery mission, right?
Absolutely prepared, sir. Have
Excellent.
My retrieval solution. We're waiting for the badges to be placed amongst the troops.
I jingle the case, Excellent. Step up on the transporter pad. Turn around.
Sir?
Chief?
The computer's indicating that you're carrying a singularity.
Yes.
I'm happy to bypass the command code, sir, but that does require two executive officers to allow me to transport a singularity by transporter by protocol 456, affectionately known to transporter staff as don't transport boomy stuff.
Indeed.
Sir, would you like me to notify the XO so he can countersign your transport request? Or would you care to do this a different way if you're trying to be... Would you care to do this a different way, sir?
Yes, I would. Epsilon Protocol, DC, I need your assistance.
The purple lights show up? Sir.
I require a countersignature of a second command level officer. You qualify.
Don't believe that I do, technically, sir.
If you look under the subroutine, Lieutenant Commander Nerlina Tobor, your access is still there. I double-checked.
Are we spending the momentum to make that a fact, Captain? Or Commander? You are correct, sir. And on the line that requires that countersignature, it is signed.
Very good.
Rediat looks at you and says, good luck, sir.
No luck's needed, Chief. We got this. Energize.
And you are transported down. You're on board the ship. You are in the cargo area because that's basically the best place to transport on this ship. You are greeted by the colonel, and a sergeant is with them as well. And the sergeant goes off and is directing activity.
I hand the case with the comm badges to the sergeant and then shake the colonel's hand.
He looks at you. Did not anticipate you coming down.
When you're going to kill millions of people, you don't put that on anyone else's conscience, but your own. That's why we wear the pips.
You get an archer streak in you about a mile long, sir.
Well, that's
this way.
Fine compliment.
He leads you into the hall. Joining you in the hall from another way is the Starfleet engineer. We're ready. I've got some secondary things, explosives, set up in various areas to make sure technology is unusable. None of the alloys we use for this ship would be unusual based on what we've been able to ascertain.
Good work. All right, clear out. I'm going to set everything up.
I'll help you set it up, sir.
Get out of here. That's an order.
The colonel looks at you and says, if you're not going to accept the engineer who knows this ship better than any other person I've known, then he will leave because you ordered it. But I'll gladly retire my commission and stay right where the hell I am before I walk out without you.
Oh, I'm leaving right behind you guys.
Excellent.
I need to know.
Then we go together. And he looks at the engineer, who's very, I don't know what to do right now. And he scowls. And then the engineer just takes off. Doesn't salute, doesn't turn on. Just, he got the point.
Or just mutters on his breast, God damn, they're still as, just like I remember, they're stubborn. Fine. Thumbprints, unlock the thing. Start setting it all up. And I'll tap all my right. Comm badge. Tobor to Chizilrur. Please ensure that the teams are evacuated off and stand by and maintain transporter lock.
So I don't respond back immediately. I look at whoever's on the bridge with me. He beamed down, didn't he?
Lusan looks at you like, I got eight eyes, sir, and I didn't even see that coming.
I reply, acknowledge, sir. We will begin beaming people up.
Dave, the difficulty on this is only going to be a 1 because of the different things that have been done to reduce the overall difficulty. I'd like you to run, since you said you were going to be doing so. When you enter the main transporter room to begin the process, because everything is timed to go after you, you give it a little bit of time. Ready at leaves transporter 1, gets to the one of the additional transporter rooms, the purpose being to have 2 experts on that to manage any challenges. Barretta 1, ready at does let you know that the CO beamed down, sir.
I look over, says, excuse me?
Yeah. Use the computer to cosign, and then walks out.
Before moving over to the transporter console, Tenari will go over to the back wall and pound his head on it twice and then move to position.
Excellent. Tenari, you are in position. Everybody's in position. Difficulties 1, no complication range beyond 20 at this point. And will you be buying any dice? There is no momentum and there is 3 threat.
I will buy a dice with threat.
Yeah.
All right. We're trying to do this and still keep everything secret from the locals, right? So can I argue then daring engineering?
Sure.
Okay. And I have transporters and replicators as a focus. And then using procedural compliance, I'll take 1 of those 3 dice as a success.
Okay.
By the way, that was a very good suggestion, Joe. Thank you.
It's like Nathan wrote that talent just for you.
Yep.
I think we should thank him online shortly.
10 and a 19. I will re-roll the 19.
Okay.
That is a 13, so I have 3 successes.
Excellent. That gives you 3 momentum. Anything for an immediate spend?
For the spend from intense, let me just go ahead and reduce the time just because we're on a schedule.
Okay. As opposed to time reduction, what I'll do is I'll allow the time to sync up perfectly. So any variance that could have happened is eliminated. You were able to get that coordinated well with that momentum spend.
Actually,
the B-mounts.
It's 2 momentum to create an advantage, right?
Yep.
Let me spend the 1 from intense and 1 other one to create an advantage that we managed to hide this perfectly from the sensors.
Excellent. All right. 1 momentum, 4 threat. The B-mounts are going according to plan. The device is prepped and placed. This would be your opportunity to set the timer on the device. This has significant room for complication, so it's a 5 complication. It is, however, also fairly difficult to get the timing just right, even with all the calibrations that have gone on. So it is a 4-5 challenge.
All right. I'm going to spend 1 momentum. Because I did the reading. So I'm going to use my science score as my engineering score. And act as though I have a focus in EOD, explosive ordnances.
Yep.
And then I'm going to use control engineering to set this.
Okay.
And then how many momentum do we have?
0.
So I'm going to spend 6 threat to buy 3 dice.
And so that we are aware, with that expenditure, I am now at 10 threat. No momentum.
All right. And this is, you said a complication range, full bore?
4.
19, 18, 17, 16?
Yes.
16 or better. 2, 4, 10, 11, and 19. So I've got 6 successes, and I'll give you 2 threat to buy off that complication.
Okay. It is timed. You're set. You move into position, get beamed out. The explosion goes off. As you're beaming away, the timing is ticking down, and the colonel is standing next to you and says, I never really did like these things. Let's hope it works. And then as the energy starts to form and you start to disintegrate to a molecular level, the colonel looks at you and says, Tobor, You said Tobor, right? And then I am taking the 8 threat necessary for a scene reversal. As you're going away, you see the explosion start to happen. When we come back, you are on the DC. You are away from the system, out by that buoy. You did successfully stop the geologic event from creating massive loss of life. It did have a significant environmental impact. There has been widespread flooding, but loss of life, minimal destruction, a lot. But it was not nearly as bad as it would have been in and of itself, because by knocking their satellite off course or out of the way so it didn't get where it needed to go on time, they could not retaliate in a timely manner. It was definitely seen and identified as a natural disaster. There is a bunch of information on their social networks and stuff in the RDF about the possibility that this was a run-up to create a war. The geologic event did create a situation where the Voltaine government is making efforts to try to go to the table with the RDF. Nothing imminent. It's not like a kumbaya moment, but they're at least asking the question. What it has really done is just caused groups within both nation states to stand up and speak out more about getting their governments to be better than they have been. Less about political opportunities and more about reaching out for success. And as you're gathering that information and settling folks, the colonel has rested upon the fact that he knows your name from somewhere and he can't quite think of where it is, but he says someday he'll remember and he'll definitely look you up. The question I have for the crew is, where would you be taking these 30 some odd Earth officers and enlisted folks who are so out of time?
One thing first, when Tobor beams up, besides giving him a reproachful look, I will look at him and say, so in the middle of all this, did you remember to bring back a souvenir for Shazilla?
I got the extra comm badge. If this went wrong, it had to be on my head, no one else's.
Actually, I understand, sir.
Pats you on the shoulder. I know you'd fly into hell with me, but sometimes you gotta walk in alone. And he walks out of the transporter room. Tobor has now entered his fortune cookie phase.
All right. That is actually the end of the mission as a whole, but I did on air want to discuss a little bit about what your overall thoughts are for the Lost Platoon.
So I think first we'll need to stop at like Illyria. Because, like, we've literally doubled the life support capacity of the ship by having 90-some-odd people on board. So, like, we want to get to this nearest safe place where we can figure stuff out and call someone. And then we call Pritchard and file our reports with Starfleet and everything and get Temporal Division involved and how to resettle these out of time.
So Temporal Division wouldn't be involved because there was no breach of temporal prime directives because they didn't go through time. They were basically asleep through a period of time. So you're not necessarily going to be giving them information that they can't take back. There's not a plan to put them back in time.
But like I called the like captain of the Bozeman. Be all like, hey,
how do you handle it?
I got some buddies.
Pritchard says, we can get them all back. I'm going to send a few of my Aegis teams. We can spread them out among several of our Aegis vessels. Basically, you'll lead a flotilla of Aegis vessels back to Aslan Station. We'll get them all back here. We can house them here for now, and we'll just call for additional counseling personnel to come in to educate them, get them up to speed on technologies, things like that, and let them individually make decisions. And he says candidly, he goes, they were serving at a time where people didn't get paid, but we owe them a lot. And we do need to debrief them on what they saw in that battle. While our conflicts with the Romulans are largely over, there were lives lost there that they can attest to, so we can put families and governments and settlements at ease. There were 3 ships lost in that conflict. We found one of them. basically, they're going to go back to Aslan Station and figure it out from there. But for the in-between game sessions, they are a resource for information or people you can get to know or people you can identify with, talk with, chat with, those types of things for whatever purposes. That engineer, for example, knows a ton about the ships of that era and specifically that ship. And that cryo stuff was not Earth standard. It was an alien technology, so there's questions about where that came from. That's not on any records that anybody knows about. And then you actually have an engineer who 200 years ago took some alien cryo technology and adapted it to Earth tech at the time successfully enough to keep people alive for 200 years. While there's some errors involved, that's a pretty spiffy engineer.
Ocean is going to have some conversations with the Colonel, mostly because I'm in charge of figuring out who's going to be where, who's going to be bunking, but also because I'm curious as to what he's going to want to do. The question of what we're going to do with him is one way to look at it. I'm letting him know that I'm interested in what they want, and I will let him know that I'm sure he's going to suggest that he doesn't want to be put out to pasture. And I will suggest that if they ever do that, to let me know. To plant the seeds.
Tobor, Ocean, and the Colonel will have conversations, and will have conversations with Pritchard. A strike force team trained in all these things. We just have to upgrade them on the tech, but they work well for Epsilon program, is my recommendation. Recruit them into, bring them into the fold. They have no security risk. They are complete black boxed by 200 years of time. No, in fact, no one knows they're alive and exist. The perfect ghost unit. And Ocean, when you hear Tobor's talking to Pritchard, this is the most mercenary and coldly calculating you've ever heard him talk.
So that's fine.
I don't think Ocean was going there.
My question to you is, since you got back to the ship, Ocean has been extremely formal and cold. Do you say anything to him about why you did what you did?
Of course. Essentially, at one point, I'll invite him for dinner and break bread, as trills do.
So after the invitation from Commander Tobor, Lieutenant Commander Ocean, you arrive at the captain's quarters. You chime the door.
Enter.
I will enter the room, look around just to, standard, who else is here? Nobody else is here.
Just us. And yeah. Sabian's at his little kitchenette island peninsula setup. And dinner's just about ready. And it's a very traditional Andorian dish. I don't know if it's one of Ocean's favorite ones, but he wouldn't have dug into your personnel file, but it's a dish that he particularly likes from Andoria. Plates it out. Come on, Commander, join me.
I'll move into the room. I will sort of just wait quietly while you finish making dinner.
Yeah, I set out the plates, sit down. I think we get to that comfortable point, a third of the way into the meal. So what's on your mind?
Sir? What do you mean?
Your antennas are giving you away. I know there's something bothering you. So let's have it.
Okay. I take another bite, sort of pondering my response. You chose to handle the deployment of the device yourself. You did not tell any of us what you were planning.
Indeed.
Why not?
He takes his napkin and blots. Sometimes I forget how young we all are at this stage. It was to protect the mission and to protect my crew. There obviously is going to be a board of inquiry. The Prime Directive was violated. There are very few times in a Starfleet officer's career that breaking the Prime Directive leads to good outcomes. I think today is one of those days, but there are going to be those who disagree with what happened here today. And I needed to protect the mission. Epsilon is more important than me. It's more important than the ship. I'm sure you're aware. You've seen all of our duty rosters and personnel. We're a crew assembled from very eclectic members of Starfleet who have had very unique experiences. None of us grew up on the idyllic homeworld and are motivated explorers. We all understand the costs of this mission. And so, when the Board of Inquiry meets, and if they find that I took improper action and I lose my commission and my command, I needed to know that the people I trust the most are still in place and still here doing the job. Pritchard and I have made some enemies in this quest that some call insane. For example, Captain Chaz could use this incident as a way to push the DC and Pritchard out and take over, and I can't let that happen, and I needed to know that I had you watching my back and that none of this could splash onto you. If I had come to you, I know you would have helped. Unfortunately, I couldn't let you be standing next to me during this Board of Inquiry because I need you on the bridge of the ship.
Why ponder that for a moment?
It wasn't Narilla's equations, and it wasn't Ovidian's recalibrations. It was my decision. I killed those people. Didn't matter the fact that they were already going to die, and that millions more would have died if we didn't do anything. I still killed them, and I could not let any of you all carry that burden with you. And I hope one day you'll forgive me from taking that choice away from you.
I find it interesting that you trust me to deal with some of the more unsavory acquaintances that we've had to deal with.
I didn't pick you randomly out of a hat, Ocean, to be on this ship. Nor did I pick any of the crew to serve here. The most naive of us is Narilla, and she lived through the Dominion scourging of Beta Zed. We have an extremely large percentage of Vulcans and Beta Zed on my ship for a very specific reason. Because we all can see, we can all understand the stakes. And at the end of the day, the safety of the Federation is paramount to all of us.
So I'm listening.
And I don't know if this will help with this, but I do trust you. In fact, I will trust you with this that I've never told anyone else. Tobor met Colonel Hawks back in the day. Not many people are aware, we don't advertise it too much, but Trill Society has had warp capability and technology and space travel and such as long, if not longer, than the Vulcans have. There was a time that I remember before the Federation existed, before General Order 1 existed, before the Prime Directive was called General Order 1. And my society didn't have the Vulcan sensibility of non-interference. And so, with our long lifespans and our perspectives, we meddled. We nudged. We put our thumb on the scale. We ensured that Surok came to power and that logic prevailed on Vulcan, and that the Romulans were not victorious.
Could you imagine what Navarre would look like if the Civil War had not occurred?
No.
So I will have to deal with Colonel Hawk
He seemed to recall the name, but doesn't know exactly where it's from, and that's
going to be a complication. I think Colonel Hawk can be useful.
I agree. Us. I think the entire Tiger team, displaced from time, no home, no family, they will all, as individuals and as a group, be looking for a mission and a purpose, a reason and why they survive.
That Starfleet will have resistance to providing that for them.
And their soldiers from 100 years in the past. And while we, Starfleet, survived the Dominion War, we, for better or worse, we don't train soldiers. We train Starfleet officers. And having someone with the Colonel and his team's sensibilities and perspectives, I think, will be a great addition to the Epsilon project.
The lack of warrior training is something that one of my grandsires has often spoke about as a weakness of the Federation.
It's an enormous strength right up until it isn't. With like many things I've found in these long centuries.
Well, Ocean really doesn't have too much to say after you've sort of explained all of this to him, but there is a reduction in the tension that he was experiencing. Throughout this, you have seen one of the antennas occasionally twitch, which is probably the equivalent from him of the eyebrow raise. But he hasn't challenged anything that you've said. The piece about the court-martial, when you were describing that to him, you actually got a head cock out of him that wasn't something that he may have considered was part of your thought process. So, but he doesn't speak of it any further, and he'll let the conversation drift to more
mundane things. What's the duty roster for next week looking like? And we just kind of have our weekly briefing strategy check-in over our meal, as has become the kind of tradition.
So as your conversation goes from the deep clearing of air, so to speak, and self-assessment and sharing of ideas, perspectives, it then shifts into your standard social tete-a-tete or repartee regarding ship's duties, rosters, and the camera close up on the table that the two of you are sitting at, showing you kind of both leaning in a little bit more as you've come to an accord. And then pans back out, showing the room as a whole, so you get the perspective of two individuals back in sync in the midst of a quiet, social, familial moment. And then you goes like out through the window, and then you see this starship moving through space at warp on its heading towards Aslan Station.
In his own time, first of all, Tanari will make sure that Dr. Now has the Epsilon tricorders for when he examines the Makos, just to make sure that the
deep paranoia
complete scans are done. And then he will talk with the engineer, get an idea, show him the holodeck, create a simulation so he can see what he did with the alien technology. And as time goes by, get him up to date with how technology has improved since he's been in stasis.
Absolutely. None of the Makos are infected with species Epsilon. They're all clean. And
by the way, when that happens, when they're scanned, like when that happens, as Tanari walks out of med bay, he'll look up at the ceiling and say, "Happy now?"
There are a sequence of purple lights that kind of wink at you in a very sarcastic, almost equally as snarky way. Lieutenant Narilla, for her part, is actively doing her job, checking through specimens, going through her work, evaluating just scans and results of what just happened, because there's a lot of information that can be gleaned from that kind of thing, unaware of the crazy risk the CO just took and some of the other happenings goings on. So there's like this montage as we wrap up those scenes of people getting back to their lives, interacting as the Aegis vessels come in and troops are sectioned off. There's three Aegis vessels and your ship gets a single squad. The colonel and the engineer stay on your ship and everybody's taking a squad back to Aslan Station. The episode closes as all those ships leave.